Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
So you actually heard him brag that he killed Ronnie Chase?
That's what he was saying. He was
students
like,
at Marinette High School are safe. We were in a very tragic situation.
By its adoption of House Resolution 1737.
You don't boot your team. I don't care what happens.
Lesbian. Your mom's a lesbian.
She's going to hell, this bitch.
World famous Phil Hendry Show. Welcome and good evening. Every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast, a news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about, where truth is our bitch. We take it through the looking glass and beyond. We take it places other talk shows cannot go, would like to go, but can't. Ask them. 877-876-PHIL is our number. And a note on our website, philhendryshow.com. As you know, every Saturday night I tell you guys that we do, and you know that in addition to KTLK in Los Angeles, our flagship station, we also are live on KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio on Saturday nights at 7 o'clock, and we will have a video cast, for our first ever KFI video cast, Saturday night at 7. You got to have a backstage pass to watch us perform the Saturday night show, as you do Monday through Friday here, looking at our live video cast at philhendryshow.com. We're going to give you an updated bit of information on the man tied to the Ronnie Chason murder, including his alleged history as a drug dealer. A football player compares booing athletes to booing soldiers returning home from overseas. Plus, we'll get into the Grammy nominations. Ted Bell and Daryl Weber, who is a former player for the Kansas City Chiefs. Mr. Weber will be with us at our second hour tonight. Here on the Phil Hendry Show, 877-876-PHIL, our affiliate spotlight this evening on Winston-Salem's WZTK 101.1 FM and KJRB 790 AM in Spokane, Washington. Two great stations on the Phil Hendry Radio Network, and they are stations that get it, and we appreciate it. We're going to bring on Ted Bell, though, to start things off tonight as we talk about giving for the holiday season. Ted Bell sponsoring this portion of the Phil Hendry Show.
Thanks a lot. And here at Ted's of Beverly Hills, we are, like a lot of you, intent on giving to charity this year, Toys for Tots, Salvation Army. So please give generously this year.
We want to put our meat in your mouth.
Ted's of Beverly Hills, and Ted joining us this evening. This is a very interesting topic, the idea of giving, Ted, and businesses have a special responsibility, don't they?
Well, I think as business people we do, Phil, and you know, we're working tonight. We are going to be busy all through the holiday season, and we're grateful for that. We're grateful for the fact that our customers come back and make Ted's of Beverly Hills a place where you can stop and enjoy the holiday season with a great meal and good warm companionship with friends. But we never ever forget. That there are a great many people in need. And during this portion of your program, I want to talk about Toys for Tots. I want to talk about Salvation Army and the fact that I have been disappointed, but we always, what we try to do with Toys for Tots, the same thing we do with Salvation Army, I try to raise the bar and try to keep it a quality effort as opposed to what a lot of people have done, which is to go into their garage and find a toy that's broken. And I'll bring that over. I don't think that is something you want to do.
Well, Toys for Tots is the you contribute toys to the children who have none, right?
Well, yeah, they're for needy families that cannot afford to give their children toys. But what I like to do, because I'm Ted Bell and we have a prominent business here in Beverly Hills, California, is I buy a new toy. And I will take it down to Toys for Tots. And again, we are 100% behind Toys for Tots. And what we try to do is lead by example, and that's what I'm mentioning to your audience here tonight. I bring a new toy down to the Toys for Tots Center, wherever they're collecting these toys. And you want to show the people that are there, whether they are people that are charged with collecting the toys or whether they are people that are down there dropping off toys, you want to let them know that you are bringing a new toy, and you show that to them. And sometimes, you know, you got to try to get the attention of so many people there, you know.
And you were telling me last year that you had a situation when you brought a new toy to a Toys for Tots center that the individual down there who was monitoring the drop-off didn't like your attitude or something? I'm sorry, I didn't mean to bring that up.
No, it's okay. I said to him, I tried to get his attention. He's a young man, and I said, hey, you. I didn't know his name, and he was busy putting all these toys in. I said, hey, you. I said, you look at this. This is a new toy. And he looked back at me like he didn't quite know what I was saying. I was saying to him, this toy that I'm bringing is new as opposed to what you're fooling around with here. And Phil, the generosity of people, I absolutely praise it. I absolutely praise it. But I think there's a difference between a Ted Bell or anyone who goes and buys a toy that is new as opposed to perhaps a family that's cleaning out their garage. I don't see Toys for Tots as the next best thing to a garage sale.
Well, are you saying that the toys... I always thought that the toys that they give at Toys for Tots are new toys.
I don't know. I know a lot of them are used. I think what they do is they put Christmas wrapping on a toy that's got a wheel broken off, or if it's a doll, it's got a missing part of some kind. And I suppose that any young, needy child should be grateful, but I think it hurts me. It hurts me personally. Because when I was a child, I told you my father had problems, and we were not sure, you know, from one month to the next, what kind of, whether my dad would have a job or not. And I asked my father one year, I had seen a gas station. It was a little toy gas station that I saw in a toy store. And my dad said, what would you like for Christmas? I said, Dad, I would love to have that toy gas station. And that Christmas, unfortunately, what he did was he went out to the garage and he hammered together some wood and painted it. And, okay, and he said, you know, here is your garage. I said, that's not the one. You know, that is the one that was in the toy store.
And so he made one.
Well, yeah, he made one. And I know that most people will tell you, isn't that a nice thing? Isn't that touching? And it is, because my father could barely hold a job. You know, Phil, he had a terrible drinking problem.
Yes, I do.
But even though he had a drinking problem, I asked him for a brand new a gas station as a kid, and he puts this thing together and spray paints it gray and says, here's your gas station. So what I've always felt ever since that time, when I take a toy to Toys for Tots, I will go down there and show the young man and whoever is there and show the people, see this? It's new. And this is what Ted Bell is about. It's a new toy. It's not something that I found in the back of a garage. It's not something that I cleaned out of a footlocker at the foot of my daughter's bed. It's not something that I found under a bed. It's not something I found in a vacant lot. This is new. See? And I will hold it above me for, you know, a beat of three, one, two, three, and then I'll give it to the young man. I don't just give new toys either, Phil. I give quality toys, and that's the other thing I wanted to talk about.
We're talking to Ted Bell here. Our number is 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-PHIL. Now, you have a list here?
Yeah, what I do is I like to give quality toys. We gave the Lego Ultimate Building Set. I give the Crayola Glow Dome. I gave the Leapfrog Leapster gaming console. And, you know, so that's quality stuff. And when I say to you, for instance, Phil, and I say this with, you know, a little bit of humor, but what junk do you know?
And what junk? Well,
no, I'm joking, but you obviously you're not doing anything like that, are you?
Well, what, you know, when I give to Toys for Tots, I buy a toy. Now, I may not buy the top-of-the-line toy. I can tell you that it's a new toy.
Well, it's because you don't have any kids.
No, the kids are all grown, you know. There's no toys left, but the toys that I will give will be a toy.
But give your audience and give me an idea of what it is that you donate, and I... For instance, we gave, Marcy and I gave the Matchbox Slinky the Garbage Truck by Mattel, which is a toy that the kids really love. And it's expensive, but that's what I do. I'll go down to Toys for Tots, I'll hold the toy above my head for a beat of three and say, new. And what that does is it wakes the people up at the Toys for Tots bin.
Marcy talked to us earlier and said that you made two trips to Toys for Tots this year with the same stuff because there was nobody there. What does that mean?
Yeah, if there's no one there to see what it is I'm doing, I'm not going to go down there, and there was no one there, so we turned around and came home. And I circled the area, you know, if we're getting coffee, I'll circle the area with a pair, you know, like a pair of binoculars, and I'll look at the Toys for Tots bin, and when a crowd starts to form, then I'll say, okay, let's hit it, and I'll go down there and give the toy.
But well, you're asking me about the toys that I give. I give toys that are, you know, maybe the crayon set.
No, not the crayon. I said the Crayola glow dome.
No, not the glow. I don't know, Ted. Or coloring books, dolls.
In other words, you do what most people do, which is you go either the used or the very cheap toy route. I appreciate that. But at the same time, I don't. I think that if it's Christmas, would you want your children to have garbage under the tree?
No, of course I wouldn't.
And I don't understand why Toys for Tots accepts toys that have a leg, there's no leg, or and you given a coloring book, I think is very, I think for a professional radio personality who's nationally syndicated.
I don't know what, you know.
I think for a professional radio personality nationally syndicated, giving a coloring book is not the example that you set for your listeners, is all I'm saying. And so what I do is I set an example for a lot of these, you know, parents, quote-unquote, who are at the Toys for Tots bin, and I'll look at them as I pull up, and I'll say, this is a new toy. I don't know what you people have brought. I don't want to know. But this is new. And
how do you know they're not bringing new toys?
Well, I think that's very, I think that's remote. You know the saying, a little goes a long way, or any little bit helps? Well, that's, in my opinion, that's not true, because a coloring book, you or your listeners giving something like that, it doesn't go a long way. And we would ask you, Phil, as a nationally syndicated radio personality, to spring for something a little better than a coloring book or a doll with a head that it doesn't fit.
I don't give used toys.
Well, you don't give used toys, but you said you hold the cost down, which is the same thing. And that's what we're trying to get away from for Toys for Tots.
All right, 877-876-PHIL, world-famous Phil Hendry Show. On the line is Ted Bell from Ted's of Beverly Hills. We're going into a break. I forgot to mention to him, but I have to be honest with you. In any event, we're talking about Toys for Tots and Salvation Army and giving for Christmas. Ted Bell says that most people give used junk to Toys for Tots. He buys a new toy, and he spends money on that toy. And he is hopeful that he's an example to other people. Now, I mentioned to him, we get a coloring book or we'll get a doll. And Mr. Bell's opinion is that's not enough, that, you know, we have to spring for a little bit more. Our number is 877-876-PHIL. Do you guys give to Toys for Tots? Do you give a used toy? Do you give a new toy? Do you spend money on that toy? 877-876-PHIL. With Ted Bell next hour, Daryl Weber, former player with the Kansas City Chiefs, talking about Entrell Roll and his comments concerning booing of athletes. The world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
It's the Phil Hendry Show.
See, this is new. This is brand new.
To the world famous Phil Hendry Show.
Ted of Beverly Hills Steakhouse, come on down.
Remember this year when you're giving to Toys for Tots or to the Salvation Army, remember that there are those of us who give an awful lot to charity, myself and other members of the business community.
Well, you're saying that you give a lot to, and welcome back to Phil Hendry Show. Our number is 877-876-PHIL. We're talking about giving for the holiday season. Ted Bell from Ted's of Beverly Hills, our sponsor this hour, talking about that. Are you, you're not a fan of Toys for Tots?
I'm a very big fan of Toys for Tots, very big fan. But I recognize that in recent years, I think people use Toys for Tots to make themselves feel like they're something special when what they're doing is wrapping up an old toy and dropping it in a bin, and then they get into their car and pretty much they're anonymous. So I think they go home and they feel good about themselves because no one's ever going to know that they wrapped up a broken doll or a busted scooter and use Toys for Tots as a garbage dump. And yet they will go around to people and say, oh, I gave the toys. Oh, yeah, I gave the Toys for Tots. And so...
Well, are you insisting, because I know that you've talked about your employees.
Oh, absolutely.
You insist that your employees also donate.
Oh, absolutely. But I tell my employees, I tell all my servers and my busboys, I want you to buy a new toy. And we had an incident last year where one of the kids, Ruben, who is one of our busboys, had given a bubble. It was blowing bubbles. If you know what, you know how the kids blow the bubbles?
Yeah.
And I said to him, what do you think you're doing? I said, and he said to me, I don't understand. I said, no cheap garbage. And you have to say to them, I said to this kid, I said, I got a telephone here, Ruben. It goes right to the INS. I was only kidding. You know?
Well, you got to scare the kid because he doesn't know. Maybe he doesn't have the money.
That's not an excuse. When you've got a job and you are working, it's not an excuse to say, oh, I can't afford to be charitable. So what we're asking basically is this, Phil. You bring a new toy, and when you do bring a new toy, do what I do and what others in my, business owners who own businesses like mine will say, this is a new toy if the people are there at the bin. This is a new toy. See? And you get the attention of the young person that's helping sort the toys. You say, you or whoever you are, this is new. I don't want it going in with all of the garbage because what will happen is it'll get messed around in there. And you want to keep it separate.
All right, 877-876-PHIL is the number here on the Phil Henry Show. Talking to Ted Bell, Toys for Tots. And we're also going to talk about the Salvation Army, right, Ted?
Well, that's a whole other thing. The Salvation Army, I give so much in charity every year that I give more than the Salvation Army gives. So there's no real reason for me to donate to the Salvation Army.
All right, 877-876-PHIL. And let's go to Alex in Mill Valley, California on the Phil Henry Show. Hold on for a minute, man. Here is Alex on the Phil Henry Show. Why are we having a problem here with the phone call? Alex, go ahead. You're on the Phil Henry Show.
He totally misses the point. This is not about how fancy the gift is or what you're giving. It's about the spirit of giving and the holidays and helping out some kids who don't have any chance.
Oh, that's not that. You don't have the spirit when you're using it as a garbage dump. That's not the spirit.
I don't know anyone. I volunteer with Toys for Tots. I don't know anyone that dumps off garbage there.
Well,
never
you don't know because they wrap it up. So how would you know if they've got it wrapped like a gift?
You're telling me they go through
saying.
all the trouble of wrapping up a gift?
Are you telling me that they're spending money? You know they're not doing that.
I don't know what
you know they're
spending.
Not doing that.
I mean, I have no
I'll tell you what they're...
Let me tell you,
spending nothing because I happen to know. I'm in business and I see what these people do. And they go into their garage, they find all the broken toys, and they wrap them up, and they bring them down to Toys for Tots. And you guys act like you're so grateful, which I'm sure you are. You don't know that they're using your Toys for Tots. I said it on purpose because I knew it would bait a guy like you. These people,
I think you pretty much
just
made my point. You're missing the whole point.
No, I said it because I knew you would be baited by that because you're the kind of guy. What I mean by these people is just anybody dropping off toys.
So anyone dropping off toys, everybody is just dropping off garbage as far as you're concerned.
As far as I'm concerned, yeah.
How do you know that?
I'm saying, unless you know, sir, what they're dropping off, all of the toys, then you don't know. Because I know.
But that's my point. Bringing you don't know either.
They're bringing in. No, I know.
The point
is not to use it as a dump off. What's that? Well, do you?
Unless you have x-ray vision, I don't know how you would know.
Do you?
Do you? No, but I'm willing to give them a benefit of the doubt.
Oh, you're willing to give them the benefit?
Are
you willing to give them the benefit of the doubt? You leave your front door unlocked, too? You want to give people the benefit of the doubt there? Come on, pal. Where are you from?
Well, Ted, you are basically saying when you pull up, you say new. Now, what does that mean?
I'm telling the people like this gentleman who says he works there, this is new, so I don't want you just throwing it in with the garbage. And there's something else that they do, and I'm not saying this band does it, but a lot of these people that volunteer, they'll take some of the new stuff for themselves. And that is...
What?
That's true.
That's outrageous.
Take some of the new stuff for themselves.
That does not happen.
You can't say that.
There's
sir, I'm sure there's a lot that you haven't seen. It doesn't mean it's never happened. And, you know, I'm sure that, you know, to be honest with you, you've never seen me naked. Okay? So,
all right. Thank you very much. 877-877-876-PHIL. Thank you, Alex, very much, and thank you for volunteering the way you do. 877-876-PHIL. Toys for Tots. Is it just a drop-off for old busted toys? And we'll also talk about Salvation Army with Ted Bell from Ted's of Beverly Hills here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. 877-876-PHIL.
Phil Hendry. Famous Phil Hendry Show.
Ted's of Beverly Hills Steakhouse, come on down.
And come on down to Ted's of Beverly Hills. We'd like to tell you where your local Toys for Tots drop-off place is, as well as the Salvation Army. And remember that
here at
Ted's, we do a lot better job than the Salvation Army. A lot of ways, Phil.
Are you saying that you guys donate more money to charity than Salvation Army, or?
Well, I know that I personally, and I can't speak for the business community, but I know that I personally probably do more for charity at Christmas time than Salvation Army does. And, you know, they say that at Christmas you should not draw attention to yourself, but it's important because, and I would never do this, but it's important because when I walk by a Salvation Army a collection bucket where they have the person dressed as Santa Claus, I walk right by them, and I don't have any guilt because I know I do more at Christmas than Salvation Army does. What I will do, though, because a lot of times people will stare at you. If you walk past the Salvation Army bucket and people stare, I will turn and look right at that person and ask, what are you looking at? And they'll say, nothing. I'll say, well, I know what you're looking at. You're looking at me because I walk past Salvation Army. I give more to charity than Salvation Army, and then I'll go into the store.
Well, it seems to me that you have campaign, if you will, Ted, that when you go to Toys for Tots of Salvation Army, you're sort of letting people around you know, you know.
Well, letting them know what is really up. You know, that first of all, this is a new toy. It's not something that I pulled from the trunk of my car that's been there for a year. And I give more to charity than Salvation Army. I want people to understand that. Really, that's what is expected of them, and I think that people come up very short, very short. And you heard that one guy, the Toys for Tots guy, he doesn't know what people are giving. He doesn't know whether it's stuff that is broken, if it belongs to at Goodwill Industries, if it belongs someplace for a guy that's got a plastic arm, or, you know, a lot of these people will work on those things. And
not a prosthetic arm, and Goodwill Industries does very good work, too, putting the handicapped to work. You understand? So, you know, I'm not trying to...
When you say to me, do you understand, Phil, I get it.
All right, that's fine, and I appreciate what you do for charity, but I would rather not disparage the handicapped, if you don't mind. Our number is 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-PHIL. And Robbie in Durham, North Carolina. Go ahead, Robbie, you're on the Phil Hendry Show.
Hey, Phil, how you doing?
Fine.
Hi. I just want to know, has Ted thought about how he sounds right now on the radio? How he sounds when he's talking to us?
What do you mean us? I'm talking to you.
The audience.
You don't speak for the audience. I'll talk to you, though.
Okay.
And I'll tell how do I sound? I sound educational. I sound like I'm giving people an education, as opposed to going to Toys for Tots with a beat-up old toy that you might have, you know, bought at a discount. You go there with a new toy. That way you give a poor child the experience of a good Christmas. And the same thing with the Salvation Army. I give more to charity than a guy with a bucket and a bell, and I want people to know that.
Right, but doesn't it sound arrogant?
No, it doesn't sound arrogant.
It does. It really does. It sounds arrogant, and I think it sounds like you're discouraging one who would normally give.
What do you do at Christmas? Let's talk about that. What do you give? Do you even know these agencies that I'm talking about? Do you have a family?
I do.
Do you have a family? You have
a wife
and kids? Really?
I have a wife and four kids.
So what do you do?
I don't give to Toys R Tots. I never
have. The answer is nothing.
Okay, but
the answer is nothing.
Okay, but listen,
you don't do anything.
Ted.
You don't do anything.
There's other charities.
Tell me what you do. What do you do? At, well, I'm
well,
asking
well,
you.
Personally,
time, what do you
personally,
do? What I ask you, what do you do at Christmas time? I give to Toys R Tots.
I tell you right now,
junk.
If I had
like
to
you
talk
would.
To you about this directly, I would give up. Because you're over talking
no.
me. Let me answer you. Let me
You're slow, pal. Get with it. Let's go. You're slow.
Let the man answer, please.
Yes, please let me answer. I can hardly hear him, but let me answer. Listen,
you already made that point.
Okay. Well, listen, there's other charities. We work with the homeless during Christmas. But I'll tell you now, it sounds to me like you're discouraging others from giving to
the
homeless.
You know, you're not very descriptive. You work with the homeless doesn't tell me anything. What does that mean? You work with the homeless.
We volunteer with the homeless at Christmas time.
What does it mean you
volunteer?
We volunteer
at a local soup kitchen for the homeless at Christmas time. We donate blankets, food. It's not Toys R Tots, but... You know, I'm just telling you, you sound very rude.
All right, so I'm saying that I do more than you do. That's all I'm saying. Is that rude? It's honest. It's honest. And I think what you're
but
doing
everyone
is... And I don't
do
even know
what
if what
you
you're
do,
saying
man.
Is true. I don't even know if what you're saying is true.
Why would you doubt the man?
I think it's easy to say we work with the homeless. You know, we work with the everybody says they work with the homeless.
All right, listen, let's take another phone call. 877, thank you very much, and thank you for your work with the homeless there, Robbie. 877-876-PHIL. Here's David in the Phil Hendry Show. Go ahead, David.
This guy says he works with the homeless. What does that mean?
David, hey. Go ahead.
Hey, you going to let me talk? You still trying to stop talking over that other guy?
Is he talking to me?
He's talking to you.
Well, we'll see, okay?
Let me be
we'll see.
Specific about why. I've been working with Toys R Tots for since 1989 when I was in the Marines.
They don't take
broken, beat up toys and hand them out.
Hold on, Ted, will you please?
He didn't tell the call screener.
How do you know what he told the call screener? So David, you have worked with Toys R Tots since you were in the Marines in 84, did you say?
89.
89?
Yeah, 89. I've been working at drop-off centers and processing centers since 1989.
Right.
And
so I would come up to that and I'd say, brand new toy, here it is.
Well, if that makes you feel better, then that's great. But they don't take broken toys and pass them out. Any toy that's wrapped up, they unwrap. And process it, they take out all the junk.
Exactly what I'm saying. Exactly what I'm saying. You guys have got to pick through the garbage that these people wrap up. That's what I'm saying.
Well, let me tell you, 90% of the stuff that comes through Toys R Tots is new. It's not garbage that you're.
Well, you talk about new. I told you about this busboy we got who got this bubble blowing kit. And I said to him,
if that's what he can afford, and that's what he wants to donate, then so what?
I would prefer, honestly,
that you take your charity and move it to a whole nother section of giving and just totally unassociate yourself with Toys R Tots. Because
why would I do
you're
that?
Making upset.
Why would I?
Because you're making it sound like a bad organization, and I don't appreciate that as a former Marine. I didn't say that.
What I did say was that the people that are dropping their toys off at Toys R Tots are dropping off garbage that they found
that
in a vacant lot or something.
That's not
that
true. That's what the gentleman said.
Did you not say that 10% of the stuff that's dropped off is garbage that they find, you know, at the bottom of a lake or something?
He didn't say anything of the sort.
Well, he said it's garbage.
He said there's some junk. They unwrap it.
And they find junk.
Yeah, about 10%.
Anything that's wrapped up, they unwrap it because they have to know what's in there.
Exactly. That's exactly my point. And you said that 10% of it is stuff that you would give to Hitler, right? So what I'm saying is I try to cut down that percentage. What's that?
They pass out new or newer used toys.
Right.
The stuff that they don't want to pass out, they will give it to. So they will give it to Salvation Army. Or to the to you know, to somebody
well,
else.
That's my point. That can get, that's some my
of the,
point.
Very, very little of what they get, they throw away. Very little.
What I'm saying is I cut down the percentage of the garbage that you get by holding the toy up at the processing center and say, new. You know,
all
basically what I'm saying is
you
beat
just
that.
Want to stand there. In the glory of giving and say, oh, look at me, I'm giving a new toy. You just want, want the attention. That's,
wait a minute, don't you, think
like
something, don't you think there's something to be said for a man that influences people to go back, take that thing back that they brought, that they found in the street, take it back and go and buy something that's good? Don't you think there's something to be said for that?
Well, when you stand there and go, new, and then you say to the guy that's working there, hey, you, I don't want this... You know,
if I don't know their name, what do you want me to say?
Excuse me, sir.
I'm not sure that's what I say, but the point being, I don't want my new toy put in with the stuff that a guy found in the street.
Then you know what? Go give it to your church. Don't even associate with Toys for Tots because you are just giving them a bad name talking on the radio right now.
Well, sir, I don't. That's not my intention at all. It's Salvation Army.
You're making it sound like everybody that's donating the Toys for Tots is giving junk.
And that is not the case whatsoever. That's what you...
No, I just said, you said 10% of the stuff that comes in you wouldn't give to Adolf Hitler.
That's not what I said.
He didn't say that at all. He didn't say that at all. David, thank you for your call. Our number is 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-PHIL. When people give, you're saying don't give unless it's something quality, which I certainly understand.
Wait, what happened to the guy? The Toy for Tot man.
The Marine?
Yeah.
I hung up on him. He's done.
Well, I think that's very unfair because he brought up the Salvation Army. Salvation Army stands there and they collect a bucket full of nickels. I do more every year in giving. I don't want to tell you, Phil, about how generous I am. I don't want to do this. You understand?
Well, Ted, I'll tell you, you're not having a hard time telling me.
No, but the reason why, and I told that young man, if I don't get on your program and tell people, okay, what I do at Christmas time with a new toy, and I walk by that guy who has the Salvation Army bucket, and I have no guilt at all, I'll stare right at him, and if anybody's looking at me, I'll say, what's your problem? Yes. Does it sound angry? Yes. Because I want people to know that what I do, I extend myself. I think we all should.
Well, it all sounds very sort of hostile, you know.
No, it doesn't.
Yes, it does. When you say, see this toy? New. Hey, you. Put this in with the new stuff. And then you go by the guy with the Salvation Army bucket, and you're looking at the people. Hey, what are you looking at? It sounds to me like you're trying to get into a fight.
No, far be it, Phil. I'm trying to remind people, the people that are listening to your program right now, how cheap they've been at Christmas. And how they should begin to kick in a little bit. I mean, I don't think that that's a bad thing. I think what I'm saying to people, they work hard. The American people work hard. But when it comes to Christmas, they have been cheap. And I think they appreciate the fact that I'm telling them they're cheap.
Well, I haven't been.
Well, you said a coloring book.
All right, 877-876-PHIL. Yes, I did say a coloring book. That's, you know, 877-876-PHIL. Ted Bell, who gives a new toy at Toys for Tots, and he also walks right by the guy with the Salvation Army bucket. He's basically saying, I give more. I don't need to give to you guys. 877-876-PHIL. Have the American people been traditionally cheap at Christmas time? Do they need Ted reminding them of how cheap they are? World famous Phil Hendry Show.
It's the Phil Hendry Show.
Hey, you. No. Put it in the other bin.
You're listening to the world famous Phil Hendry Show.
Of Beverly Hills Steakhouse, come on down.
So we can't give to charity here at Ted's of Beverly Hills. What we're basically saying is you got to give a little bit more. If you just give something that you found in the back of a truck,
here at Ted's,
you're basically dumping garbage.
Put our meat in your mouth.
Ted Bell with us here, dumping garbage, huh?
I believe that, Phil. And as I've said to the young people who work for me here at the restaurant, you know, if you're going to give, give in the spirit of how you'd like to receive it. If you were a mother or a father of a poor child, and you unwrap something, and it's a doll, and the black... A lot of these people will just buy a black doll, and you're giving it to a white kid. Well, by the same token, you know, if you give a white doll to a black kid, that, to me, you don't care. Or you do, it's so broken, you'll give the black, it's a doll, and it has a white kid, it has a white doll body, but a black head on it. And why do they do that? Because it was broken, and they're not thinking about how they're putting it back together again.
I've never heard of anything like that.
I haven't either, but I'm saying this is what you run the risk of when you give stuff that is cheap, just the word cheap. And I told Ruben, that young busboy of ours, I said, you're going to do what? He said, Mr. Bell, I want to give a bubble-blowing kit. I said, you don't want to start your experience in America as an American, as a working immigrant trying to get legal status. You don't want to start it off like some cheap creep with a bubble bubble blowing.
Well, that discourages that young man. That's exactly what people were saying.
No, it discourages him. It teaches him a valuable lesson. And Salvation Army, they do great work. But am I wrong to say that I do better work?
You give money, Ted. It's different from working directly.
No.
I think it is different from working directly with somebody. 877-876-PHIL. And plus, you have said that the American people are traditionally cheap at Christmas. You know, and...
In my way of thinking, yes, they are. Yes, they give, but it's cheap junk. You know, it's like a lot of that cheap Chinese stuff that they find and they say they don't want it anymore and they'll give it.
877-876-PHIL is the number here on the Phil Hendry Show. Going to Nashville, here is Greg. Go ahead, Greg, you're on the Phil Hendry Show with Ted Bell.
Okay, I guess what we're looking at here is, I'm going to try and piggyback off of what a Marine said from 1989. You can't critique someone giving.
Sure you can.
You give what you give. Whether it's cheap or not, it's giving. You're critiquing someone's giving based off of what kind of money they have or what kind of quality it is. You think you're giving better than somebody else? That's wrong in itself to say that you're getting better than someone else.
You have to think more expensive. If you're getting rid of garbage, it's the same thing as throwing it into a garbage can, but you're giving it away so you make yourself feel better. It's still garbage.
Garbage or not, you give what you can.
No.
Some people can't give what you can give.
Wrong. No, if you give garbage and you know it's garbage, then what you're doing is you're insulting somebody.
Nobody's giving any garbage. Your argument just now about the dog was a head with a white head with a black body. You said that never happened, but you want to use that as an argument. But, like,
I'm sure
say a white kid gets a black doll. They still get a black doll. You want them to not give that black doll so that white kid doesn't have a doll? Like, you're giving what you have.
Well, let me ask you something. That's an insult to a white kid to give that kid a black doll. It's the same thing with
that
kid getting a white doll.
Are we back to the 1970s racism issue right now? Like, really?
Oh, here we go. Wait a minute. Are you telling me that it's somebody's racist because it's the wrong colored doll? That's not even
a person. That's where you're going with it.
No, wait a minute.
Why do they have black dolls? Why do they have black dolls?
We're black kids.
Why do they have them? So what's wrong with white doll?
There's nothing wrong with a white doll. What's wrong with a white kid owning a black doll?
Wait a minute. You said there's nothing wrong with a white doll, so why can't the black kid be happy with that?
Let's quit fooling around with this.
That's what I'm saying.
It's ridiculous, okay?
All right, then you're saying we shouldn't have black dolls. Then you're saying we shouldn't have black dolls. You're a racist.
No, he's not a racist.
Let's change it. We're not talking about toys anymore. We're talking about time. If I give an hour of my time painting walls and you give two, you're better than me because you gave 2 hours, yeah? That's your argument.
I'm saying that I gave more of myself. Yes, and I think that traditionally Americans say here is something that's got a black body and a white head on it, and I'll give it to a kid.
Well, wait a minute, man. You just said that
And it's possible, given the fact that they put this junk together and just throw it in a poor kid.
Disassembling bodies and putting them back together. Yes, it is possible.
No. They're not doing that. They're taking broken parts of dolls and reassembling them.
And they're putting a black doll head on a white doll body.
I'm saying it's possible.
You just made that up.
I'm saying it's possible that that's going to happen, and we have to be prepared for the cheap creeps.
Well, what if it's never happened, man?
Your responsibility is to give. Toys for Tots is responsible for giving them a quality gift. Regardless of what you give,
right.
They can quality it out and give them a good quality gift through Toys for Tots, and if it's not up to their standards, they give it to the Salvation Army or Goodwill or whatever.
Then let's
serve a better
purpose. Why don't we help Toys for Tots and give them quality stuff instead of fishing around at the bottom of a lake or the back of a vacant lot for stuff that you want to get rid of? You know,
who's going to go to a vacant lot?
You're giving what you can give.
Then, yeah, but you just said Toys for Tots will take something that a guy who, that's all he can give, and he's trying to be a good guy, and Toys for Tots will take that and throw it into a Dipsy dumpster. That's
exactly
how bad
right.
They are.
That is their responsibility,
oh,
not
that's
yours.
So nice of them. How nice of them to do that. Some blind man who wants to help another blind kid creates something, and Toys for Tots takes that and runs it over with a Jeep.
I thought it was a black body with a...
Hey, what's your language, you know? I've got Mexicans that work for me.
All right. Well, thank you very much for your call, sir. Get out of here. The world-famous Phil Henry Show, Daryl Weber, coming up next.
What happened? Did you dump that guy? Because he said the word...
877-876-PHIL.
Phil Henry. Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
You don't boo your team. I don't care what happens.
I'm trying to catch my breath so I don't refer to this maneuver.
By its adoption of House Resolution 1737.
What he did tell me was whoever did the shooting in this case was proficient.
Students at Marinette High School are safe. We were in a very tragic...
Say, baby, put down that pipe and get my pipe up.
That is a threat on the radio.
World famous Phil Hendry Show. Every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast. A news, talk, and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. Where truth is our bitch. And we take you through the looking glass and beyond to go places other talk shows cannot go, would not go, should not go. Don't try it at home. Don't try it in your radio studio. We'll take care of it for you. 877-876-PHIL. 877-876-PHIL. We're going to be talking here in a moment with Daryl Weber, a former player in the National Football League, played with the Kansas City Chiefs back in the 1980s. We'll be talking about booing and a Giant safety, one of the New York Giant football players, Antrell Roll, compared booing football players to booing soldiers when they return from war. If you're ready for that, so join us here in just a second. We'll have Mr. Weber on the phone. Our web address, philhenryshow.com. Live streaming video of the show right now, along with all kinds of archive material. You cannot enjoy this radio show without also, really joining the future, if you want, and that is the multimedia platform that is our show. We're on the radio. We're also on the Internet. We have video as well as audio. We have audio archives, downloads. We got it all. PhilHendryShow.com. 877-876-PHIL is the number, and joining us from Kansas City is Daryl Weber. Daryl, how are you, sir? It's nice to meet you.
Thank you. Have me on your program, thank you.
And you play pro ball from when to when?
I was drafted in 81, and I played with Kansas City for 8 years. My last season was 1988.
1988? I can't hear you if you could speak up.
Yes, sir. My last season was 1988.
Did you hear the comments of Mr. Roll?
Yes, I did.
Can you tell me what you think?
Well, he's a young man who is going to be he's going to be emotional. He's going to talk about frustration playing football. It's very frustrating. It is a very physical sport, and there's no question about that. And it is a very dangerous sport, and there's no question about that. I think that the way he put it, it might have been put in a way that's not going to be disrespectful, to our soldiers coming back from Iraq or Afghanistan. It is true, I think, though, that what we do and what I did and what young people today do in the National Football League is comparable to, a soldier coming back from war, only from the standpoint that we do risk our lives, happen.
Well, you risk your life. I understand that there's the potential of life-ending injury when you play football. There's no question about that. But to say, do you think it is unpatriotic for the fans to boo football players?
I think that it is what we do on a football field is similar to what a soldier does, and this is what I mean by that. We give the American people, we give people in America a sort of reinforce the manhood and the grit of the country. What we do on a football field is we make it so that the American people come out and reinforce the American dream. And that is every bit as important as going into battle in Iraq or Afghanistan and killing Al-Qaeda or some of these insurgents. And we do that at the risk of our lives. And we do that. We risk our lives out there on the field each and every day. And so when soldiers come home from Iraq, you don't boo them. And we take our job seriously, so you don't boo us either. And that's all he's trying to say. I think that what we do and what the soldier does in Afghanistan and what the soldier does in Iraq, we're not asking for people to build us a statue or this kind of thing. What we're asking for is respect, because we're out there doing something for you that you can't do for yourself, and that's to bring you a sense of manhood, a sense of country. You know.
Well, all right. I understand what a soldier does for this country. I understand what soldiers who are risking their lives. But you're comparing what football players do to soldiers, and I'm not quite getting the comparison, okay? You're saying that...
But what I'm saying is that a football player risks his life the same way a soldier does. And we risk our life so that when you look at a football game on Sunday, you have your manhood and your sense of national identity reinforced.
And well, what about females who watch football?
Women, the same thing. They have reinforced in them the sense that they're protected by a country that honors the kind of manhood that we put on display on a football field on Sunday. So because you pay an amount of money for a ticket to come in and watch me risk my life, that is where you're right then. You know, you don't have a right to sit there and boo at me. What you do have a right to do is to come in and watch as I put my life on the line for you. And that's all we're saying. If you are a soldier in Iraq and
Okay, I'm going to interrupt you here for just a second. A soldier in Iraq and Afghanistan, nobody's paying to watch admission to watch them.
That is true, and that is only because you can't. It is practically impossible for you to put grandstands up in Afghanistan or a grandstand up in Iraq and show soldiers what they're doing. So you can't charge admission for something like that. But you can charge admission to watch what the soldiers do in Iraq and Afghanistan. You can watch them do the same thing here in America by watching me or watching Antrel Roll. And that is risk our lives for this country. And so you pay to come in because you can't go to Iraq and see it, you see.
Because I can't go to Iraq and see this kind of display of masculinity and manhood, I go to a football game.
That is correct. You go to a football game to watch this display of American strength and manhood that literally can kill me and kill another football player. If you want to pay money for a ticket to come in and watch me, you absolutely have every right in the world to do that. But you cannot disrespect me because you don't have the same situation that I'm looking at. You know, I'm looking at losing my life every weekend when I'm playing football. I look at losing my life every week, and I lose my life so that you can sit in the grandstand and feel good about your team, feel good about your country, you know, feel good about America, you know. In the meantime, if I break my neck or I break my back or they carry me off the field, that's the last that I'm ever going to live as a human being, you know, but I did that for you. And when a soldier come back from Iraq or a soldier come back from Afghanistan, all we're saying, players of the NFL or the soldiers coming back from Iraq or Afghanistan, and you don't boo us. You don't tell us, oh, you ain't dying good enough. and you don't say that you ain't getting your neck broke good enough, and you ain't saying you ain't getting your back broke good enough, you would never do that. And so I would appreciate it, and that's why I agree with what he said, essentially.
Well, what would you disagree? So entrail roll is essentially in spirit or in the point of fact, it's something you agree with, right?
I agree with the idea you should abu. I don't think this young man understood exactly why he was saying what he was saying, because he's just a very young player, you know, and he's just starting out, and he doesn't get really what it's about. He just doesn't like people booing him. He has a sense he's out there going to get himself killed. He don't like people booing him. I agree, though, that you don't boo people that are risking their lives for you.
And well, it's the first time that I've heard that anybody would say that an NFL player...
I understand that.
Yeah, is risking his life for me.
I understand that, though, because I don't think anyone has put it as succinctly or clearly, but the players in the National Football League risk their lives for you all the time. Okay, I risk myself out there on the field each and every day when I'm playing. When the soldiers come home from Iraq and Afghanistan, they're risking their lives. You don't boo them, you don't boo me. Otherwise, what you do is then you take it to a level where I can't go out on the field and play if you are going to boo me, and basically saying, you know, I want you to go out and risk your life, and while you're risking your life and getting your life in jeopardy, I also want to make fun of you and laugh at you and boo you.
All right, our number is 877-876-PHIL. On the line with us is, and hold the line for Mr. Weber, Darrell Weber with us, former football player in the National Football League, as he talks about Antrell Roll, who was a young man to compare booing players to booing soldiers. As a matter of fact, this past weekend is when he made these comments. And let's listen to what he had to say just before we go to our break. This is Antrell Roll. He was mocked this week after this interview with a New York sports station saying it's never okay to boo your home team and you should always show loyalty.
You don't boo your team. You know, I don't care what happens. You know, you don't boo your team. I mean, and that's, you know, this is your home team. You know, we're out there playing. We're out there, you know, pouring our heart out for our team as well as for our fans. You don't boo your team. You know, I don't care what the situation is. You don't boo your team. You know, we're 7-4. You know, we're not 2-10. You know, we're 7-4. You know, I mean, there's going to be ups and downs during the course of the season. Under any circumstances, should you boo your team?
All right. So, and there was Darrell Weber agreeing, saying you don't boo your team because these guys are risking their life for you the same way soldiers do. All right. 877-876-PHIL. 877-876-PHIL. The world famous Phil Hendry Show.
Famous Phil Hendry Show.
Hey, welcome back. Our number is 877-876-PHIL here on the world famous Phil Hendry Show. In Kansas City this evening is Darrell Weber, a former player with the Kansas City Chiefs. And you played defensive back like Antrell Roll, correct?
Yeah, well, I played a strong safety position. I think he is a cornerback. He might be a cornerback or free safety. I played strong safety for ages.
All right, so you played a strong safety, so people know, is like a defensive back that plays the run.
We come up, you know, on a short play a lot more. Everybody comes up on a running play, but we are more so than a free safety. And we're the strong side safety. A free safety is somebody that we're going to generally is your center field. What we call a center fielder. Somebody's going to the last line of defense, you know.
Okay. Is there something to that position? The reason why I ask, Darrell, is there something to that position that would cause you to be hypersensitive to boos?
No, not at all.
So every player...
Every position on the football field is a potentially a dangerous position to play. And every position you're on when you play in football is potentially a life-threatening position. And just like every soldier who's up against Al-Qaeda or up against, in Iraq, they're going to potentially die. And so when we go out onto the field, and I know that I may not see my family again, I know that I may not see my wife, and I've got a wife, and I've got two children now, and they were babies back when I played. I might not ever see them again. They might not see me again. And I got to take that all into consideration. I go out and play on a Sunday afternoon. And then you have, after the game, you have a post-game
situation where you are humiliated, and you have the boo, people laughing and booing while you are risking your life for them. And
when you talk about risking your life for them, is the part that I you know.
Well, I don't understand what is difficult to understand about that. I mean, I'm going out on a football field, and I'm risking my life on Sunday afternoon so you can feel good about yourself. Not being an American and having some manhood. And so most guys watch football so they can get a little bit of manhood to get them into the week, you know. And
I never thought of it that way. I never thought of watching football as something that reinforces my manhood.
Well, it may not be conscious, but that's exactly what's happening. It is giving you a shot of manhood. And you're getting that manhood while I'm risking my life to bring it to you. I'm risking my life. I go out there and I could die and never see my family again, just so you can have a little bit of manhood to get you through Monday or Tuesday. And I think that was what Antro was talking about.
All right, 877-876-PHIL here on the Phil Hendry Show as we get into the minds, the workings of a professional football player. Here is Marcy in Bloomington, Bloomington, Illinois. Marcy, go ahead. You're on the Phil Hendry Show with Daryl Weber.
Hi, yes. I wanted to call and say football players are there for entertainment. Troops are actually risking their lives to keep us safe and for our freedom. My husband is in the Army, and he has lost two of his best friends over there, and you're trying to compare him to a football player?
Well, I'm not saying anything other than the following thing, Marcy. I'm saying that when I go on a football field and when I played, I'm retired now, but when I went on a football field, I risked my life too. I saw young men go down with broken necks. I've seen young men go down with a broken back. I've seen young men paralyzed for life. Darryl Stingley is one, and just some of these other players that I could mention to you. So I risked my life. I risked my mobility, my locomotion, however you want to put it, to be able to, so that you and your husband, you know, or your brothers or whoever can feel like men for 48 hours into the week, you know. That's all I'm saying.
And I agree, nobody should get booed, but at the same time, you cannot compare a football player to a soldier.
Well, would not boo a soldier, I take it.
I wouldn't, no.
Well, would Marcy, would you boo a soldier? You wouldn't boo a soldier because you got soldiers in your family, correct?
I'm just saying.
Can that lady hear me? Can you hear me, ma'am? Would you boo a soldier?
Would I? No.
Marcy, can you hear? No, she wouldn't.
All right. So neither would you boo a football player. You would not boo a football player because booing a football player is like laughing at a man whose neck is broken. And you don't find that funny, do you?
No, not at all.
All right. Well, then that's what I'm trying to say.
But at the same time, you guys are making a lot of money, and you're trying to say that you're like, you know, you might get killed tomorrow.
Yes,
and you're making a lot of money. You get to go home to your families and stuff. They're over there for a year. They don't get to see their families. They don't make a lot of money. And you're trying to compare that to a soldier. That's so wrong.
Well, most of us are not married. Most of us at that time were single men, so we have no family to come home to. You know, we're living in an apartment because the team signs us and we're in a new city. And then this money you're talking about, you don't make that unless you live. If you can survive 4 or 5 years, then you start to make the big money. You come as a rookie, you don't make any money at all. And if I die tomorrow, say my second year in football, I'm a dead man making about the same money that a soldier makes.
Oh, come on. You're not telling me the NFL's got a minimum salary of... What's the minimum salary in the NFL?
I don't know what it is, Phil.
What was it when you were playing?
I think minimum was probably about $100,000, $150,000 a year.
150 grand a year. No soldier makes that.
No soldier makes that, but he gets all of his food. He gets to carry a gun to protect himself. What do I protect myself with? Yeah, see?
What do you mean,
wow,
what do you protect yourself with?
I am blown away right now.
Wait a minute. What do I protect myself with if a man wants to come out there and break my neck? Nothing.
Well,
I got nothing.
Don't play.
I have to play because if I don't play, your husband, your brothers don't have manhood.
This whole manhood thing is an interesting...
My husband has a lot of manhood.
Yeah, and why does he have manhood? Because he watches himself some football on Sunday afternoon, that's why.
Because
we're talking about.
No, my husband doesn't watch
that's
football,
exactly why.
Actually.
He watches football
on Sunday.
He doesn't watch football.
My husband does not watch football.
What did you say, ball?
Volunteers for the Boy Scouts. They
watch T-ball?
No, she said her husband doesn't watch football.
Forgive me for saying this, ma'am. You know what football is, right?
Yes. He knows what football is, but at the same time...
Do you know what football is? Because if you don't know what football is, you may have the sports confused that he doesn't watch.
I'm sorry, you know, but I don't think that people get manhood from football. I think they get
If he doesn't watch basketball, you may not think that that's football is not basketball. You know that, right?
What are you saying? This lady doesn't know what football is? You know what football is, right, Marcy? It's the one where they wear the helmets and the pads. Yes, she knows. Well, he thinks that you've got it confused.
No, ma'am, I'm just saying, if you have it confused with basketball, you may not know what it is your husband doesn't look at. But we got a country full of men who need to know what manhood is. And if they don't have manhood,
what manhood is,
but I'm dying. He didn't have manhood before he got deployed? I don't think so.
All right. Anyway, Marcy, thank you for your call.
Wait. I don't like the fact that she made that point and I don't get to follow up.
What point?
She says her husband got manhood being deployed 3 times. And I'm saying that when I played football, I could have had my neck broke every single solitary Sunday. And you don't think that that's the same, you know, what your husband gone through?
No, my husband has been overseas away from everything.
That is unbelievable.
Away from the entire world. And could be blown up any second and not even know. If you see a guy charging you, you obviously have somewhat of a defense. My husband doesn't have a defense when he's rolling over an IED.
You don't. You don't always see the man charging you. You go up for a pass, and there's a guy who's going to blindside you. And the next thing you know, your head is flopping back and forth like a rag doll because there ain't no neck left. That's the point I'm trying to make.
All right, we'll be back on the world-famous Phil Henry Show with Daryl Weber as he talks about professional football players being the same as soldiers. Don't boo them. 877-876-PHIL. We'll be back.
Phil Henry.
Yeah, I didn't like her getting the last word. I don't like that.
Famous Phil Henry Show.
And welcome back. We're talking about a comment from a New York Giant football player this week on a radio show in which he said, you don't boo your players. You don't boo your team. He was very upset with the New York Giant fans this past weekend booing the Giants. He made the point that they're 7-4. They're a good team. Don't boo your team. And then he went on to say that football players, like our soldiers in Iraq and Afghanistan, should not be booed because they're out there putting their life on the line. With me is Daryl Weber, a former professional football player in both the United States and Canada. And Daryl, surely when you hear him say the soldiers in Iraq and Afghanistan, you know there's a difference between football players, athletes, and those guys. And one of our callers, a lady, just made the point, they're entertainers.
I wish that lady was still online because she was able to get in a good point. And I don't think it was fair to go to your commercial before I was able to make my point, which would have made her look bad, because I'm not trying to make her look bad, but here's what I'm saying. I'm out on a football field on a Sunday afternoon. I'm trying to do my job. I could risk getting my neck broke. I could risk getting a very serious injury and dying on that football field, and I'm doing that in front of 60, 70,000, 80,000 people. I don't think, I'm not sure, but I don't think a soldier in Iraq or Afghanistan, if he is out doing his job and he has 80,000 people in a grandstand someplace looking on, cheering and all of this, or booing every time, booing every time he gets shot down, I think he probably, you know, find that very pressure packed. So I think if you put a soldier in a football stadium with 80,000 people, I think he's going to be about as good as I am if I had 80,000 people and I'm a soldier.
Oh, come on, man. He's a professional soldier.
Well maybe not the same way, but I'm saying that we don't know. You can't compare me because I'm there getting my neck broke in front of 80,000 people. He's there getting his neck broke in front of nobody.
except the GOAT, you know, and I don't mean to say it's not a comedy. I know that, but he's going to get shot down in front of just wind, you know, and rocks.
Well, so what? I mean, the guy is out there risking. This is a real risk of death every step of the way with a soldier. And with a football player, it is a risk of death in a particular situation, but not every single play. You're risking death, for instance, on a punt?
Special teams, well, that shows what you know, Mr. Henry, with all due respect. Special teams is when most of these injuries occur. You go down on special teams, you're rushing a punt, you're rushing a kickoff. You know, so, yeah, every single play.
All right, to say that a soldier in front of 80,000 people, what does that mean? I don't understand. So you should be respected?
It's a much more difficult situation for me to get my neck broken in front of 80,000 people and a soldier gets shot and all there is rocks and wind.
Rocks and wind. All right, 877-876-PHIL. That man is defending his country, sir. And you say you're defending somebody's manhood?
Yeah, American manhood, which is the country of America.
877-876-PHIL. Let me go to another phone call here on the Phil Henry Show with Daryl Weber. We have Laura in Rapid City, South Dakota. Laura, you're on the Phil Henry Show. Go ahead, please.
Wow, it takes a lot to get me offended, but you, sir, I think have just caught my lid. The talk about having a silver spoon in your mouth. I am in the military, sir, and I want you to think about President Obama just gave a soldier in this country what the nation's highest honor for saving his brethren. War is not a spectator sport. It is a serious deal where people want to kill not only me as a soldier, my family, but you. Have you forgotten 9/11? Well, have you forgotten the afterwave of anthrax that we were protecting? Why don't you ask that soldier who just got our nation's highest honor? Why don't you ask the men who stormed the beaches of Normandy? Why don't you ask the men who got shot down in Vietnam and Korea?
Who's all dead?
Well, the men on the beaches of Normandy,
if you think you are even close to being on the same level as them, not even close.
Ma'am, correct me if I'm wrong, but you being female, it's not very likely you're going to be in combat. Am I right about that? I said you being female, it's not very likely you're going to be in combat. Am I right about that? I don't know.
Excuse me? Yes, I am an aircraft maintainer, and I actually think that and SEALs, Navy SEALs, and Special Forces, they are away from their families 18, 24, 36 months out of a year. How many times when you were in the NFL did you get to sit down to a dinner with your family? How many times did you get to sit down with your family? I think I have spoken with, the whole time I've been married, I've spoken more to my husband over the video cam of a computer.
Well, why'd you get married? Why did you get married then? Why'd you get married if all you're going to do is look at them through a video camera?
Nation's military protecting you.
It doesn't make any sense if you're only going to see them on a video camera.
Listen to me. I'll tell you what I did. The second that I saw those planes go into the towers, I was in high school. As soon as I got out and I saw that statue of Saddam Hussein go, I went and walked into the recruiter's office. What did you do? You got paid over $1 million, I bet. What didn't you?
2001? I wasn't playing football. I retired from football in 1989.
You practice for that. If you don't want to get your neck broken, then you don't play. Don't tell me don't fight and don't get married.
I don't know why you got married. You got married, and all you do is complain about the fact you can only see your husband on a video camera, and I just wondered why you did that.
Why didn't you divorce your family because you were gone to an away game?
I was not able to see my family. I couldn't see my family the whole season because I was in a hotel, and then we're on a bus, and every week I could get my neck broke in front of 90,000 people. Now, all I'm asking is,
Go to college, get a job. Why don't you go be a lawyer?
I had a job.
Apparently,
I was a professional football player.
Because you had to play football to get it. You didn't want to risk your life, then go to college and get another job.
I did want to risk my life. I did it for you and for your husband and for your little kids so they can go and
do it for me because I didn't ask you. You asked me to do this.
Well, I didn't ask you to do that.
You asked me to volunteer for this. You asked me.
No, I didn't. I didn't ask you to do it. I didn't ask you.
You should leave this country if you do not appreciate what these men and women do.
You should leave. You should leave this country if you don't appreciate the National Football League.
In the night.
You don't appreciate the National Football League. You should leave.
What kind of a comment is that?
This lady does not. You do not appreciate what the National Football League has done for you, for your son, for your husband.
What they've done for you? How many people are walking around with a Kansas City Chiefs tattoo or a shirt on their back, paying their hard-earned military money for you?
There's a lot of them. There's a lot of them.
I'll tell you what. I'm never ever walking through the doors of a stadium again because of you.
Let me ask you something. When they're over in Iraq and Afghanistan and the Super Bowl is played, what do all the soldiers do?
It is not a spectator. I challenge you to go on.
Look at the Super Bowl on TV, don't they?
And ask them how they feel about this conversation. You know what they'll say?
Well, you know what they'll say? They'll say, thank you for having the Super Bowl over in Afghanistan. We could see it on TV. And we had bets and everything.
Wait a minute, this is a ridiculous conversation.
Speaking German, I already speak German.
I think you're upset because you can't make any valid points against me. You're losing it every step of this conversation.
I've been scoring left and right.
Well, I'm listening to the two of you. The one point you made here, Daryl, was that you said the soldiers have the Super Bowl in Afghanistan.
Yeah, on Armed Forces Television. And every time we go over there, they want an autograph. See. So they love everything we do, and they watch the football game on TV, and they bet on a game, and in the Super Bowl, they will say, I'm Army Specialist so-and-so, and a shout-out to all of my brother homeboys in there in Kansas City. So we keep their morale up, and while I'm keeping their morale up, I risk getting my head busted to the point where my head is flopping around like a Raggedy Ann doll. See, this lady, she doesn't appreciate that, is what I'm trying to say. She's laughing at me because I got a broken neck.
No, I'll tell you right now. I had a chance to go out and see a concert when I was deployed or whatever.
In a wheelchair.
Because I didn't have to sit in the trench for 4 hours at that moment when I got to. But I said I'd go to work afterwards and do that.
That's exactly right.
They're not good at you. They want to break. They are tired. They are tired.
I'm doing it for them.
They might get a chance to sit on TV and maybe their wife can see them. See, they're actually alive because they haven't been able to talk in 3 weeks. I don't believe you.
Because you're hogging the phone. And Laura, if you'd stop hogging the phone, maybe they could call home.
All right.
But you're talking all this crap about it. You know, lady, you probably hogging the phone. They can't get on it to call their wife. And I would say this.
I know that the morale is boosted when the football players go there and all kinds of guys, and it's great, and they can watch the ball game. And that's a good thing that you guys do. But to say that you are equal to them in terms of the risk.
All I'm asking, and this lady can't answer the question, how good a job would you do if you had 80,000 people cheering and booing every day you went out to do your job?
I'll tell you, 80,000 people wouldn't want to see the torment and torture and the disaster that goes on in war.
No.
You do not want to see that.
Well, they're watching football. They watch football, same thing.
No, it's not the same thing.
I could see a man get his head busted.
Oh, yeah,
did you see that man get his... That guy got his leg busted in the opposite direction, and it was right there on TV.
That's way, way less than what's going on in a war zone when people are suffering horrific injury.
Life expectancy as a radio operator is 30 seconds in a combat zone. 30 seconds. What is your life expectancy? 86 years.
They need to train them better. That's number one. Number two, my life
expectancy.
Are you
talking about lives for 30 seconds? Don't you think he needs better training than that?
What's that mean?
The guy's only lasted 30 seconds. I need to get a man in there that can do his job longer than that.
30 seconds because he's in a combat area, man, and he's taking fire, and he's in a war zone. That's why.
And I'm out on a football field, and any given minute, my head's going to flop.
What is it with the head flopping? Is that the broken neck?
Yeah.
Okay, Laura, thank you very much. Thank you for your service to our country and your husband. We appreciate your call this evening. Thank you. 877-876-PHIL. Here is Reggie in New York City, listening on WWRL. Go ahead, sir.
Good evening, Phil. First, I want to say, After any NFL football game, how many body bags are lined up outside the stadium? None.
You know, I was going to say, it depends on how many drums they got to pull out. Out of the stadium? Outside of the stadium or where? Because they don't always die. You'll die in the
going back to the hotel?
5,000 soldiers died last year in Iraq. How many football players died?
No, no.
How many
soldiers died in the last 7 years. That's not 1 year. Get your back.
Okay, well, how many football players died in the last 7 years? On the football field.
I don't know. I don't know. They won't release
in the middle of your football combat.
They won't release the information. They won't release the information. I don't know.
What do you mean they won't release the information?
We don't know if they die on the way back to the hotel, if they die in the hotel. There's no...
Okay, that's another problem I have with your comments. After the football game, you go back to the hotel, you lay around, you get massage, you go to parties, you guys go have celebrations or whatever, tailgate parties and this and that. No, in Iraq, there is not one tailgate party. These guys are praying to God that they get out of this situation.
Wait a minute. In Iraq, they got to watch the Super Bowl. I just got done telling a lady they have...
Okay, they get to watch. They get to watch I Love Lucy, too.
Big deal.
They get to watch that.
What are you talking about?
My thing is this. This is just another case of an overpaid guy. See, I work in right in the middle of Ground Zero, in this exact area in Ground Zero, and I make minimum wage close to minimum wage, my man.
Why
do you work for whoever TV works for? Because I have to feed my family. Because that's not logical. Some of us have to work. All of us are big all-stars. All of us don't make billions and billions of dollars.
I have to defend this country.
Over this one more thing I want to make a comment on. See, I live in New York. And in New York, it's a tradition to boo our all-stars. Patrick Ewing, I used to watch Patrick Ewing get booed every night. Every night, Patrick Ewing.
I think that's wrong.
It's very
unpatriotic. It's unpatriotic to boo the ball player because he's out there getting his neck busted.
Oh, what is it with you, man? You know, booing in sports is almost a God-given right. I mean, if we can't go to a sports event and boo, then what's the point?
Okay, then why don't you go over to Iraq and boo them? Because it's the same thing.
Because they're saving our lives over in Iraq. Whose lives have you saved? How many lives have you saved playing football?
I can't count. I don't know. They're probably in the millions, the lives I've saved from someone.
Okay, very good answer.
Man, unbelievable.
Okay, I don't believe him. Here's another guy who spent his whole college career on the football field and didn't crack one book to find out anything logical to say in response to your comment.
I mean, this is ridiculous. When I was in college, they didn't let me go to practice. What has your team done for me?
What has the NFL done for me, as a matter of fact? Absolutely nothing but take my money. That's all they've done.
We saved millions of people's lives by giving people something to do on Sunday and reinforce their manhood.
They can do a whole bunch of other stuff on Sunday.
Like, there ain't nothing to do on Sunday. If they go to church, you know that.
What do you mean nothing to do on Sunday?
You know, I see you men. See, the way you two are laughing at me is a very unpatriotic. That's the point that young man made, Roel.
What about me? What about me? I work as a security guard near Ground Zero. Not one time. Has anyone ever acknowledged the security guard? I'm here first responding
because
to the board.
I hear everybody, but I ask for a raise,
I get fired.
You got there late. You are a security guard after the plane got crashed into the building. If you'd been there before, somebody appreciates you.
I was four blocks away.
When the thing went down. Exactly. I think, you know what, and I got to take a break. Reggie, I've heard from a lot of people that were at Ground Zero as workers who survived, who don't really, nobody acknowledges them. Everybody talks about the people that died, but not really the people that survived the trauma of that. So you're not alone. I appreciate your call. 877-876-PHIL. We have on the line here Daryl Weber talking about the how unpatriotic it is for people to boo professional football players the same way as soldiers from Iraq and Afghanistan. 877-876-PHIL. The world famous Phil Hendry Show. We'll be right back.
What happened to young man? Phil Hendry Show. What happened to him? It's a security guard.
to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Yeah, not play.
You retired. Why? We're back here with Darrell Weber, former professional football player, as we talk about Entree Roll and our Entree Roll, who made the comment that don't boo your team. It's the same as booing soldiers in Afghanistan and Iraq, which you did take exception with the way he said it, but you essentially agree with that. Now, you mentioned that you were injured.
What essentially ended my career, Phil. I mean, I played 8 years, but you should be able, as a defensive back, you play into your early 30s.
And what ended your career?
I had a broken bone in my ankle. But I had to go through not only the broken ankle, but the embarrassment. If you see a video replay, you'll see my leg is just flopping. It just dangled. And as I was getting on the stretcher, you could see my leg was just swinging back and forth like it's on a, just nothing connecting it. And that's embarrassing, you know. The embarrassment of that young kicker, that Washington Redskin, where he had to dive for the ball on a missed kick, and he got a knee right in his face. He walks off the field, and he's got a smashed, scorched up face. People laughing at that. But I would tell you other thing. Mike Utley, Chris Canales, Darrell Stingley. You know these people.
Yeah, these are all guys that were paralyzed, and it's a very, very brutal and tragic eventuality. But I think somebody made the point, that gentleman who called from New York, how many body bags are lined up outside a stadium after a game? Here is Calvin in Jackson, Mississippi. Calvin, you're on the Phil Hendry Show with Darrell Weber. Go ahead, please.
Mr. Darrell, I'm getting a nice meal of bed here. You got to take a baby. And I know, flabbergasted of the comment of how can you compare. I mean, I met Earl Campbell, me is my idol, and Bob Phillips.
I played against Earl Campbell, yeah.
And he never
played it.
And right now he's coaching out in Texas, the little Ivy League, and he can't walk, he's in a wheelchair. But he would never, ever compare himself to a soldier.
I wouldn't compare myself as I was Earl Campbell. You wouldn't compare yourself because I could tackle him with like one arm, you know.
What are you talking about?
Earl Campbell, right?
Yeah.
I could trip him. He would run by me. I'd trip him.
What are you talking about? That guy
was a
bull. That guy was one of the best running backs in the league back then.
Yeah, that's what I'm asking.
I played against him, and Earl Campbell, I could take him down. All I had to do is stick my leg out and go, hey, Earl, look at that. I said, it looked to me like they got a free hot dog up there. And he looked really, and I tripped him. So
get out of here.
I got to go, okay, because I got my season tickets to hockey.
Phil Hendry. From the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
One of my friends died. It's kind of disappointing.
By its adoption of House Resolution 1737, the House has resolved that
I don't care what happens.
You heard him brag that he killed Ronnie Chase.
That's what he was saying.
That's kind of gross.
World famous Phil Hendry Show every night, Phil. 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast. A news, talk, and entertainment show that can bring you
a juicy burger.
And truth, because it's our bitch. Every night to the Looking Glass we go. Places where other talk shows can't go. But we go there anyway. Because we got to go there. Nobody else can go there. Welcome to the program here. 877-876-PHIL. And this is our news hour, so we rarely, if ever, take phone calls. But we put our number out there in case anybody has any, you know.
But if they got any really important news or something.
Yeah, if they have important news. Like, well, we got the important news. Maybe they have something that they can fill. Maybe the guy who, I don't want to talk, you know, stupid, but somebody knows something about the Ronnie Chasen, you know.
Well, they're going to call us, man. You call a Beverly Hills PD.
Well, that's true.
What are you talking about?
All right, I'm just, anyway, more information is coming out on the Ronnie Chasen murder, plus John McCain is a good man, and I like him, and I think he has the country's best interests at heart and all that stuff, but brother,
Sir, with all respect, you're wrong about don't ask, don't tell. You're wrong about legalizing weed. Not that legalizing weed is a huge issue. I could care myself, but don't ask, don't tell is you've been left behind, man. And the reason why I say that, and we'll get into this, but there is in the military, correct me if I'm wrong, I'm not a military man, but I am an American citizen. And just to sort of put a nice pink bow on this whole conversation that people often have, well, were you ever in the military? No, I wasn't in the military. You want to know why? Because I wouldn't have been very good in the military. You know what I do well? This is what I do well. I'm an American citizen, and I am an advocate for the military, and I tell the story of the military, and I tell the historical story of the military, and I support our military. And I do it as a public personality and a radio personality, and I exhort and I endorse and I support and I advocate on behalf of those guys so that their mission can be accomplished. But have I been in the military? No. Having said that, let me say this, because I come from the knowledge that our military is a civilian-directed military, i.e. the commander-in-chief. Don't ask, don't tell is a policy, and the policy can be replaced with, well, you can tell. Now you know you're serving with a gay guy. Really, yeah. And the soldier says, well, I don't like that. And you say to the soldier, well, that's too bad. Maybe you can get that job back at your dad's hot dog stand. Would you like to do that? Or what are you talking about? What I'm talking about is you've just been given an order, haven't you? Now, I don't need to be in the military. I don't need to understand the so-called culture of the military to understand that in post-war America, we integrated our armed forces with African-American soldiers, and if you didn't like it, you could take that and stick it, too. See, it's called the officers directing their men, giving an order, and you do it. And this stuff about how we're going to have guys leaving the military and it's just going to be just a terrible thing, and they haven't got any data backing that up. They haven't got one shred of real, honest data. I'm not talking about some crap that some think tank that is that's politically skewed concocted. They haven't got any data that is reliable and is actual that says that this is going to affect the military in a negative way for any length of time. The men do what the officers and the leadership in the military tell them to do. And if they don't, they can leave, they can go to federal prison, they can go to military stock, whatever the hell it is they feel like they want to do, but you're going to do it. I know that much about the military.
You'd make a pretty good general.
Yeah, I would make a good general. I'd make a very good general. I say to them, here's what's going to happen. You know, there's a story, a very good story. You see, this is just all history. When Jackie Robinson broke into Major League Baseball, 46, 47, something like that, I don't remember when, you know. I know it was very significant, and I know we should know our dates, but I don't. And
You ought to know that.
Do you?
No.
Yeah.
You're the host of the show.
He asked you on account of your black.
Never mind why I asked him. The St. Louis Cardinals were a pack of rednecks, and they didn't want to take the field against the Brooklyn Dodgers when the Brooklyn Dodgers came to St. Louis to play. This was in the first year of Jackie Robinson being in Major League Baseball. They were not going to be on the field with a black guy, and that was just where that's at. And they were going to tell the commissioner of baseball that he can just take his baseball and he can stick it. We're the St. Louis Cardinals. We ain't going to, you know. And it's actually one of the reasons why, to this day, I've never liked Joe Garagiola, because Joe Garagiola, if you remember him from NBC, that smiling meathead that they used to have, he was a catcher for the Cardinals when Robinson was playing, and he spiked Robinson on purpose because he was a meatheaded slob. Anyway, here is the point that I'm making.
What are you talking about, Joe Garagiola?
Joe Garagiola, never mind. The Cardinals said, we're not going to take the field. The commissioner of baseball at the time, forgive me, I don't remember his name. It might have been Judge Landis, but I don't think it was. He went to the Cardinals, and he basically said the following thing. Well, you know, you don't have to take the field, but you're going to forfeit the game. And frankly, we're not changing the policy. So if you don't like it, why don't you take your mitt and your chewing tobacco and your dumbass and go back to the farm? Go play semi-pro ball. Go play in the sand lot. Do whatever it is you want to do. Because nothing's going to get changed, guys. We're moving forward. The guy's playing Major League Baseball. He's going to go. He's on the Brooklyn Dodgers. He's playing baseball. And you clowns, you make up your mind, all right? Because every time you don't step out onto the football, onto the baseball field, you're going to forfeit that game. Now, just how stupid are you guys? I mean, you look stupid, but you can't really be that dumb, are you? And it didn't take very long for the Cardinals to get the message, and they damn well got out there on the baseball field and played. They might not have liked being with the black guy in the field, and there might have been guys in the military didn't like having any black guys sitting next to them in the mess hall or whatever the hell their problem was, but guess what? The officers and the policy from the commander-in-chief had been laid down, and either you accommodate yourself to it, or you can go and do something else, man. Go back to your old job selling shoes, go work a gas pump, whatever. It's not a difficult thing to figure out. And every time you hear these stories, well, the military won't stand, the men in the military, blah, 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 horse dung. And he won't fight, and he won't do this, and he won't do that. Well, I say, any guy that says that, I'm very happy to know that, because I'm happy to say to him that you don't work for the United States government in the capacity of a soldier anymore. You get your ass out. What about the gay guy? Gay guy's staying, because that guy wants to follow orders. You don't. You're fired. What the hell? What do you think that we need your ass that bad? That we need soldiers that bad in this country? That we're going to put up with a guy who's grousing and grumbling and pissing and moaning to the point where you talk about a guy that's bad for morale? It ain't the gay guy. It's you with your mouth. The fact you don't want to be next to this queer. You don't want to be serving with these guys. You want to and blah, 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 blah. You know what? Do us all a big fat favor, man, and go jump on a lake. How about that? And people act like this is some kind of a mystery. They think it's, oh, you know, I don't know. You don't know? I do. I do. I know. You give them an order. This is what's going to happen. Anybody not like it? Well, I don't want to serve with a gay guy. Great. There's the exit right there. Get out. Anybody else? Well, we're all going to quit the military. We're all going to quit the military? Great. Then we'll just have an all-queer military. How about that? Yeah. That's how you solve that problem. And I understand that the politicians and the commander-in-chief, whether it is a Bush or it's an Obama or whoever it is, doesn't want to rub the military the wrong way. You want to have respect for the brass. I get it. I get it. But there comes a time when somebody's got to make a decision.
Yeah, but you're going to say Obama's going to put gays in there. Now they're going to say, yeah, he's really a socialist. You know?
How's that? What's that got to do with socialism?
Well, I mean, that is socialism, ain't it?
No, why is that socialism?
Because Obama said he's going to have health care and gays.
He's going to have health care and gays. What is that? I don't understand that.
You know, you heard what he said in a campaign, that he want to have health care and put a gay in. You know that?
Yeah.
He want to have health care and put a gay in? You mean in the military?
Yeah, that's what you think we're talking about.
Well, what's that got to do with socialism, man? That's what I want to know.
Because he's saying that he's not going to let nobody vote on it.
Who's going to vote on that?
They're going to have the soldiers vote on it.
The soldiers ain't going to vote on anything. You understand? They ain't going to vote on where they take a dump tomorrow morning. What do you mean they're going to vote on it?
You got to let the soldiers vote on it.
Since when do soldiers vote on anything? They ain't voting on nothing. Are you crazy? Are you out of your mind? Vote? Even if they let them vote, they're going to, you know what? The word is, even if they let the soldiers vote, they'd be in favor of having gay people in the military. So what do you think of that?
I don't know, man. Are you crazy? They don't want to have them or that in there.
Yeah, because it's socialism.
Bud, I don't think you even know what socialism is. It ain't socialism to have gays in the military. It may be something, but it ain't socialism.
Oh, yeah, right. They've never had a gay in the military or that anybody knew about.
They never had a gay in the military that anybody knew about. They had gays in the military that people found out about after they left.
Yeah, but not when they was there.
But it ain't socialism is what I'm saying. And you knuckleheads saying you want the soldiers. First of all, soldiers ain't going to vote on diddly squat. That's number one. Number two, if they did, the latest polls show they'd be in favor of it.
But you're going to talk about Ronnie Chase and everything. You talk about gay.
I'll talk about what I'm going to talk about when I want to talk. Boy, you guys, I'm telling you, man.
No, but you don't recognize how the liberalism of Obama are going to have gays and then health care.
That's right, man. That's right. With the liberalism of Obama, we'll get gays in and then health care. Because those two things are completely connected, and I totally see... Oh, man.
No, you don't get it.
No, you don't get it. I get it. You don't get it.
I don't think you get it.
I get it fine. You guys don't get it. A student gets... I'll tell you who got it. The student that got pummeled by a bully, but his teacher doesn't step in. That's who got it. And now the teacher's going to get it. Plus, some people are going to get Grammys.
How you know that?
Because they've been nominated. Grammy nominations have been announced. We'll have those for you, and we'll have the latest on the Ronnie Chasen case. They've identified the individual who shot himself. They also, I've identified some of his activities, perhaps. Maybe we'll get to the bottom of this, sooner rather than later. It's the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, and don't forget our website, philhendryshow.com.
World-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Welcome back here. We have a couple of stories on the Ronnie Chasen case and the suicide of this suspect yesterday evening at around 6 o'clock at night in Hollywood in the apartment building that this man, he's been identified. His name is Harold Smith, I believe. Harold Smith is his name. And the Beverly Hills Courier newspaper was the first media outlet to identify him early this morning. And the neighbors say that he was a weird ass, and they say that he talked a lot, and they say that he was this and he was that, and I'm beginning to think that maybe this guy is just, he's got nothing to do with it.
What are you talking about?
Yeah.
Because, well, how likely is it that a guy who actually killed Ronnie Chasen's babbling about it, and then the next minute he's scaring people, and he's coming back with a gun, he sounds like just a really messed up crack addict. But how do we know this guy's got anything to do with this? I mean, he's a violent guy. He's an ex-con. He's a lot of things, you know?
Yeah, but why did he kill himself?
Yeah, well, that's a dead giveaway.
Because he said he wasn't going to go back to jail. He said, I'm not going to go back to prison. He didn't want to go back to prison. What's that got to do with him killing Ronnie Chasen? And he might have been a mental deficient. I mean, this guy's emotionally, I'm beginning to think, and I could be wrong, he ain't got nothing to do with it.
Oh, man, you don't say that, man. You said they're going to wrap this up in 2 weeks.
I thought they would. In any event, the suicide of a suspect in the slaying of Beverly Hills publicist Ronnie Chasen was captured on a security videotape at the Hollywood apartment where police confronted the man. According to law enforcement sources, police are reviewing the tape and also interviewing several witnesses who were in the lobby at the time. Beverly Hills police were serving the warrant at the Harvey apartment on Santa Monica Boulevard just after 6 o'clock when the shooting happened. A resident says the man, identified by the Beverly Hills Courier as Harold Smith, often made her nervous and talked about being hired as a hitman. That's what I'm saying. You know?
Well, maybe he figured as soon as he gets his money, he's going to go away, so it doesn't matter.
You know what? You can come up with all kind of kooky things, man, to make the theory fit, but it just doesn't sound...
I don't know, but not everything like in the movies, you know?
Okay, yeah, you're right. Not everything is like in the movies. Authorities are calling Smith a person of interest in Chasen's death, though they did not provide more information. Understand, the police are not saying anything. Beverly Hills police are not saying anything. So all of the stuff we're telling you is stuff that has been gleaned or is otherwise concocted by media, starting with the Beverly Hills Courier and then Channel 5 and then the New York Times and then the LA Times. Here is a neighbor. Her name is Terry Gilpin. She was a neighbor of the suspect. She was identified by some outlets, this suspect is Harold Smith. She spoke to reporters today about last night's suicide.
But you actually heard him brag that he killed Ronnie Chasen.
That's what he was saying. He was like saying, well, I did that. I did that. I'm getting ready to come into some big money. I'm getting $10,000. You know, he talks all kinds of crazy stuff. He's been talking crazy stuff all week. So you're thinking to yourself, okay, this guy's probably just trying to take credit for something he didn't actually do. My general impression of him is he acted and presented himself like a nutcase.
Beverly Hills Police
Police Lieutenant Tony Lee remains tight-lipped over the investigation into Chasen's murder and how Harold Smith was connected.
Our detectives were here on a follow-up, and this person was a person of interest from the Chasen incident. And that's all we have at this point. As the captain mentioned, this person shot himself. It was a self-inflicted gunshot wound, pronounced dead later on, and the investigation is ongoing at this time. We've got nothing further to disclose about the investigation.
Gil Carrillo, who recently retired as a lieutenant after 38 years with the Los Angeles Sheriff's Department, told AP today that whomever shot Chasen was a pro based on what he read in a leaked coroner's report.
What it did tell me was whoever did the shooting in this case was proficient in their art. They hit center mass, which is what you're going for in a kill. On a still target, I don't know that I could hit, and I qualify in every trimester. I don't know that I could hit a shot group that good. So it's somebody that's proficient in what they're doing.
What?
I don't know. This whole thing's starting to sound flaky.
What are you talking about, man? They knew it, hitman.
All right. If that guy's a professional hitman and we got crackhead over here babbling on about the money that's owed him and this and that, you think that's the guy?
He might be like, what do they call an idiot savant?
An idiot savant, meaning what? He knows how to shoot real good, but other than that?
Yeah.
You guys are high. Authorities are calling Smith a person of interest. Detectives received information suggesting he would be at his apartment Wednesday night. A police source told the L.A. Times. The source also said Smith had been under police surveillance for some time. Police approached the man in the lobby of the building, and he refused orders to raise his hands. You know the rest. He put up his arms. He pulled a gun and put it to his head and shot himself. And you just heard Terry Gilpin, who is one of the neighbors. The suspect might have been a drug dealer, says this next story from Radar Online. That don't make him guilty either.
Yeah, but it's all adding up.
It don't add up to nothing, I'm telling you. On Wednesday night, the man police suspected. How do we know the cops think he's involved in the murder? He's a person of interest. Maybe they think he had information about who was. In any event, Radar Online is writing the story. A man police suspected was involved in the murder of veteran publicist Ronnie Chasen, who shot himself. Radar Online has learned that he may have had a history of illegal activity and was desperate for money. According to two sources at the Harvey Apartments, where Wednesday night's suicide occurred, the suspect, Harold Smith, kept to himself and was involved in dubious behavior.
Just read it.
Harold probably got caught up in something or someone snitched on him. A neighbor who requested an anonymity said. The neighbor added that while he thought Harold was a cool cat, he sold drugs, including weed. He'd come by my apartment. We'd smoke weed together. He sold drugs, too. He was a cool cat and kept to himself and really didn't say much, the neighbor said. Nah, man, he wasn't getting evicted. That fool sold drugs and had some other stuff going on. He had money or was getting money. Think about it, homie. What? Well, get out of here. What weed dealer you know gone stay strapped with a gun? He was definitely into some other stuff, and that's all I'm going to say. What?
Right, well, that's true. What guy's going to deal weed and he's going to have a gun?
I don't know. I have no idea. All I'm telling you is I got the creepy feeling that this guy is just some weird ass. Maybe he knows who did it. Maybe he was there. Maybe he was in the car. Maybe, I don't know, you know. But let me ask you something. How likely is it that a guy like that, who is out running his yap about how he was involved in the Chasen murder, right? How likely was it going to be before if the cops hadn't come for him, one of his accomplices would?
Well, I mean, but if he's yelling about how he done it and people are focused on him.
Yeah, and if the cops arrest him and then they interrogate him, and if he knows something about other people.
Yeah, maybe he killed himself because he thought the Beverly Hills cops was them guys.
Maybe he thought the Beverly Hills could, maybe. I don't know. Well, we'll keep looking at it anyway. World famous Phil Henry Show, the Grammy nods are up next. Charles Manson's back in the news. We'll tell you why. Has to do with the technology. World famous Phil Henry Show.
Phil Henry.
Phil Henry Show.
Youth and perseverance get nods from the Grammys. Welcome back to World Famous Phil Hendry Show with Bud Dickman and Robert Leonard. Did you guys see this?
Yeah, I didn't watch the Grammys because it's got nothing but, well, the music they have is for what you would call homosexual clubs. And
will you shut up, man?
Well, I agree with him, man. It's more like for gay.
Well, so what, man? What are you talking about, gay club music? Listen to this. You know, the homophobia...
I'm just kidding around.
Well, it ain't kidding around. Although you're right, I'm looking at that. I'm just kidding.
Yeah, see?
No, I'm kidding. The Grammys, these days... You know, the Grammy Awards for the longest time, when I was coming up as a young guy, back in the day when I was in my 20s, the Grammys were a joke because they were very commercial. They didn't even acknowledge... The Grammys didn't even acknowledge rock and roll until the late 80s. They didn't even acknowledge that rock and roll existed. So now, to see all this interest in the Grammys is pretty... It's pretty funny to me. Anyway, these days the Grammy Awards have a special fondness for two things, youth and a good comeback, according to the New York Times. At the nomination ceremony for the 53rd annual Grammys, broadcast from Los Angeles on Wednesday night, Eminem was the big leader with 10 nods for Recovery, the album that has brought him back into favor with critics and his fans. Although he never really, his fans liked him, the critics just thought his fans didn't like him, and so the... You know how it goes. It's the best-selling album of the year, by the way. Jay-Z, Lady Gaga, and the country band Lady Antebellum also did well with 6 nominations apiece. Love the Way You Lie by Eminem featuring Rihanna is up for Record of the Year and Song of the Year. Eminem landed, as we mentioned, 10 nods. That's enough of that, so I'm kidding. It's right, it's like I'm in flight. High off a log, drunk from my hate. It's like I'm huffing pain. I love it the more I suffer. Right before I'm about to drown, she resuscitates me. She hates me, and I love it. Wait, where you going? I'm leaving you. No, you ain't come back. We're running right back. Here we go again. It's so insane, because when it's going good, it's going great. I'm Superman with the wind in his back. She's Lois Lane. This is the one I like. I'm not afraid. Yeah. Well, this is the one where he rips into his wife and his mother, and you know.
I guess I have that one.
So that's Eminem, and good for you, Eminem. That's, you know, it's a good, it is. It's a good album of what I've heard, but I can't listen to all of it. Otherwise,
You get a headache?
I get a headache, I get cranky, and I get tired, and I want to lay down and put a shawl on. All right, next up we have for the most notable nomination and a conspicuous portion of airtime on the one-hour show on CBS... went to some of the music industry's youngest hitmakers, an effort by the Recording Academy, which bestows the awards, to align itself more closely with the pop charts and draw much-needed younger viewers as opposed to some of the old, weird crap they've done in the past. Lady Antebellum's Need You Know is, or Need You, Need, yeah, Need, New, New?
Need You New.
No, You're Nude.
Not You're Nude, Need You Now, is a contender for Record of the Year and Song of the Year, while their album was also nominated for... Album of the Year. Oh, wrong pot. Hold on. Album of the Year. And I wonder if I ever cross your mind. That is a threat. For me, it happens all the time.
This is a country band.
It is a country band. I'm all alone and I need you now. Awesome. I like country music, but I don't like, if it sounds like it's too polished up and stuff.
Yeah, what about one lady you hated?
Yeah, Shania Twain.
Yeah, she sucked pretty, well, I shouldn't say that, because that, you know, that.
All right, thank you. Shania Twain stunk. She was, I shouldn't say that, but she did. Now then. Moving along, so we mentioned that Bruno Mars, who has sung on his own number one, hits and others, got 7 nominations, including several for his collaborations, and the hottest contest of the 2011 awards, which will be given out in Los Angeles on February the 13th, which is the anniversary of the 1971 Sylmar earthquake. Might be the best new artist category, in which Justin Bieber, or Bieber, age 16, squares off against Drake, who is 24. Drake, a descendant of Sir Francis Drake, who is a pop singer, his great-great-great-great-great-great-grandfather discovered Virginia, the same age as that old pro Lady Gaga, The cast of Glee, all under the age of 25, received two nods, Best Pop Performance by a Duo or a Group for their cover of Don't Stop Believing and Best Compilation Soundtrack. Dig it, man. Here we have now the only exception received a nod for Best Pop Performance by a Duo or a Group with vocals. Oh, this is Paramore. Excuse me, it's Paramore. Thank you very, very much. We do have to move the show along. Next up, we have a song by the Zac Brown Band, the best country song, and it's called Free. Great. Next up, I'm kidding.
What? Play it.
All right.
Just as free.
Thank you. We'll call your agent. And
play this song.
What do you want? Okay, here it is.
Just as free.
Is that it?
Free as we'll ever be. Just as free. Free as we'll ever be.
Hey, wait a minute, man. Where's Paramore on here?
They did the duo on the best compilation of a duo.
Whatever. All right, so for the Grammy nominations were usually released in a drab early morning news conference for many, many years, but for a third time, the Recording Academy went on television to begin its annual cycle, if you pardon the expression. That turned to more media-heavy forms of promotion, so they're trying to, you know, make it more of a cool, groovy kind of a thing. The television format provided some perhaps unintended comedy in announcing the nominees for Song of the Year. Dave Grohl of Foo Fighters and the teen pop singer Selena Gomez cringed slightly when mentioning the song otherwise known as Forget You by CeeLo Green. It's F-U is what it is. Okay, I think that's all we have, except for one more cut, and I don't know. Oh, yes, here we have it. A nod for Best Male Pop Vocal went to Bruno Mars, and the cover of Just the Way. There's a song that did not need to be covered, but it was by the cast of Glee.
But every time she asks me, do I look okay, I say.
How come you're not playing Just the Way You Are, man? Is that Just the Way You Are? Oh, okay, thank God. Because I thought it was Just the Way You Are. I thought it was the Billy Joel Just the Way You Are, because he did cover just the he covered a Billy Joel song that did not need to be covered, and I think it was
I forget. I'll look for it.
Thank you. So there are the Grammys on February the 13th. Check it out. Meanwhile, back in Florida, while all of the youth of America, the artistic youth of America, was being honored here in California for potential greatness with the Grammys, there are other youths in other places. The youth of Florida, for instance, where one kid was getting the crap kicked out of him while the teacher sat there and stared with a finger in her nose, or his. The pummeling of a Palm Beach, Florida middle boy, middle school boy.
They don't call him a middle boy. Ain't that what it is?
I think that if you're a middle school boy, you're basically a middle boy. A middle school boy by another student has infuriated the boy's family, who say the teacher did nothing but sit by his computer while the fight raged in his classroom. Is this true? Is it possible? Video of the fight between Joshua Poole, age 13, and Jaga middle school classmate, whose name I guess is not mentioned, a Jaga middle school classmate, shows Poole swinging wildly as he punched repeatedly before falling to the floor. The teacher's inaction was reportedly due to a school policy that staff can only intervene after undergoing training. You're kidding. That type of policy run amok is a growing problem in schools across the country. No kidding. You know who is behind this asinine stuff? I'll say it again, and I will never tire of saying it. Parents. Not the schools. The parents. And their lawsuits, and they're demanding this, and they're demanding that, and my kid should be allowed to be a jackass, and your kid doesn't get to be a jackass, and my kid should be allowed to be a pain in the ass, and your kid should be a saint, and my kid is a little stupid, and so my kid should be allowed to pick his nose and put his feet on the desk, and your kid, I mean, I'm telling you, you know, sooner or later, if we want to have a public school system in this country, I don't give a damn about tax dollars. We're going to have you want a czar? I want a czar for public schools.
Yeah, you'll never get away with it. That's when the teachers, or I mean the parents, will come down. Like, they'll come down like a broom, man.
You know something? Good, let them. I like a public school czar who says, this is how it's going to be. You don't like it? Vote me out. But what I say goes. And we ain't having none of this yet. If there's a fight breaking out in the classroom, break the fight up. But here's a teacher who's sitting there. Did you ever think it was possible? Did you ever think in your wildest dreams we'd be living in this jackass, upside-down world? And the poor kids, what do they, how could they possibly grow up with any respect for the adults around them? How could they possibly grow up with any confidence in the adults around them? Carol Kotchner Bryant, a professor at George Washington University's Graduate School of Education and Human Development, was the one that said that this is a policy run amok. Palm Beach County School District officials insist the teacher followed procedure during the middle school fight, which took place last month, and that he was not properly trained per district protocol to break up such altercations. Are you ready for that? When the students would not stop fighting, the teacher went to the hallway to get help, read a statement released by the school. Assistant Principal Brent Eiley responded and helped stop the fight. Both students were disciplined. Poole's father, Clarence Poole, told ABC's Palm Beach affiliate that the fight came after previous incidents of bullying. You know how you stop a fight? You get a garden hose and just turn it right on them.
Yeah, that'd be the best way to do it.
Yeah, except you got everything wet.
You got two kids that are fighting, and you take the garden hose and just, like, they're, you know. It keeps happening. He said his son was getting bullied. Somebody will just come up from behind and start brutalizing him. Boom, boom, boom. Bing, bing, bing. The lawyer for the family, Craig Goldfarb, said the he planned to sue on their behalf, charging negligence on the part of the school and all that. See, do you see? The fight captured another student's cell phone video, came to blows only after minutes of taunting. And we got public schools, public education. You understand that public education was introduced in this country at a very, very, very early point because we felt it was absolutely mandatory that every child in this country receive basic rudimentary education. Now, it would never be introduced today. Never. It would never happen. It's today, in today's climate, we would not have any public education at all. And I'm sure that a lot of people would say, because they're already through school and they've already graduated and they're about as smart as they're going to get or as dumb as they're going to be. And they would all say the following thing. Well, Phil, you know, that's good. That's good. No, we shouldn't. Look at the state of public schools today. Okay. So what you're saying then is that not every kid should be educated. No, I didn't say that. But they should get vouchers. Oh, they should get vouchers. Are you saying that they're supposed to have their kid educated or not? Well, yeah. Oh, so they have to send their kid to school, but the public school they can't send their kid to because that's too stupid. So what are you talking about? Give them the option to go to a private school with their voucher. And how exactly is that going to work? What school and where? What private school are you talking about, man, that is going to serve my kid that lives over here when all of the public schools are right here and the private schools are way out there? Where am I going to go there? There was a time when we thought that public education today would never, ever, ever, ever get through. It would never pass. It would never pass because it's socialism. What's the difference between public education and public health care? And you can sit and make a joke and say that public education is a joke, but it's a tragedy is what it is. Not a joke. It's a tragedy. This is a tragedy. Do you know what Vladimir Putin said today about the United States Congress? You know what he said?
Uh-uh.
He said that they're going to do something. He referred to them as dumb. He said they're going to sit there and go through their same dumb nonsense. He referred to them as dumb. It's the leader of Russia, the United States Congress. And you want to know something? Is there anybody that disagrees with him? That's the leader of Russia talking about our representative body, the American people. That's basically his opinion of us. That's his opinion of us. We put them there dumb. You know, so.
What are we talking about here, Putin or?
I don't know. I lost track. I'm depressed now because I always wanted his respect. All right, coming back here on the Phil Hendry Show, cell phone use in California prisons. It's out of control. Guess who had a cell phone? We'll tell you when we come back here on the world famous Phil Hendry Show.
We'll be right back. listening to the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
World-famous Phil Henry Show and online at philhenryshow.com. Now, I read the quote this morning from Vladimir Putin, and his quote this morning was that the United States Congress would be showing its dumb nature, or the United States Congress would be showing its usual dumb nature, something like that, in not ratifying START. Now, ever since then, if you try to find that quote, you can't find it. Now, why is that? I'm telling you right now, I read it this morning. You can find a dumb nature, the dumb nature. For instance, the Charlotte Observer, the headline, Putin, failure to ratify START would be dumb. Well, did he say it would be dumb? No. When you go further into the story, it says it would take, quote, a very dumb nature, end of quote, for legislatures to ignore that. But the quote is not, it would be a dumb nature if the quote is their dumb nature, meaning they already have one. Either way, I find it fascinating that they have sanitized, they've literally scrubbed this quote everywhere that I look for it. Now it's not there. Everywhere I look, now it's not there. I'm telling you right now, if you find the entire comment in context and you find the entire sentence, you can't find the sentence. Nowhere can you find the sentence. All they did is excerpt a very dumb nature. Now, I'm wondering why they scrubbed that. Is it because did the president of Russia ask that the press do? Well, no. Is the American media doing that so that it doesn't incense, you know, make us get angry? I don't know. What exactly did the White House ask? Who makes the decision? You know, that's a little hard, man. Why don't we, sanitize that a little bit? But that's what was said. And so my whole point is this. There is now in the lexicon, in the conversational, the throwing out of ideas by foreign leaders, at least in the case of Putin and probably others, it is now acceptable because it's very obvious that there's something wrong with the United States of America. And it doesn't have anything to do with right, and it doesn't have anything to do with left. It doesn't have anything to do with liberal or conservative. It has to do with brain power. They're dumb. They're stupid. This is an accurate read, folks. It's not criminality. It's not nothing to do with that. It's just flat stupid. And it isn't just the Congress. It happens to do with our business leaders. It happens to do with our industry. It has to do with everything. I mean, everything that we've attempted here, it seems over the last 20 years, we have just stumbled and fumbled all the way along the line. And now we got Putin throwing it up in our face. Thank you very much.
We can take it from a Russian.
We got no choice. We got to take. What do you mean you take it from? We got no choice.
No, you can't say that.
Well, he did, didn't he? What do you want to do? Launch some missiles at him or something?
There was a communist. They wouldn't let him do it.
Oh, really? What are they going to do, bud?
I don't know.
Yeah, there you go. That's the $64,000 answer. I don't know. We ain't going to do nothing. We don't have the national will to do anything, man. We are so befuddled. We are a people going one way with a government going the other way. And we blame the government for not going our way. Well, we put them there.
Yeah, you can't say it's our fault. The government is doing the wrong stuff.
Oh, get out. They're doing what they think we want them to do. Charles Manson had a cell phone. California prisons fight inmate cell phone proliferation. How do you like that, man? These are prisons, and we have to actually fight something. We don't have complete control over our prisons. This is a prison. Contraband cell phones are becoming so prevalent in California prisons that guards can't keep them out of the hands of the most notorious and violent inmates. Even Charles Manson, orchestrator of one of the most notorious killing rampages in U.S. history, was caught with an LG flip phone under his prison mattress. Manson made calls, sent text messages, and think I even got one, to people in California, New Jersey, Florida, I'm kidding, and British Columbia, probably fans. Before officers discovered the phone, said Terry Thornton, a spokesperson for the California Department of Corrections. Asked whether Manson had used the device to direct anyone to commit a crime or to leave a threatening message, Thornton said, I don't know, but it's troubling that he had a cell phone since he's a person who got other people to murder on his behalf. No kidding. Manson, 76, is technically eligible for parole, but will almost certainly die in prison for ordering the ritualistic murders of Sharon Tate and six others. Charles Manson, did you send it to him, bud?
Well, I'm not saying on account of the Fifth Amendment.
Good boy. World famous Phil Hendry Show. Don Naylor has been our technical director. Dan Northcraft, our associate producer. And, of course, our executive producer, Jason Rance. PhilHendryShow.com.
Later. Phil Hendry.